Welcome to the Self-Care Spotlight, presented and inspired by The Journal Deck, a product and brand rooted in self-care and living your truth. Hi, I'm Melissa Cousins, your host and The Journal Deck creator. On this podcast, I'm inviting you to a lifestyle, a way of being, where self-care has nothing to do with being selfish. In fact, we believe that we can give more to others when we give first to ourselves. On the Self-Care Spotlight, it's not just about bubble baths and massages, but getting to the heart of what it really means to live your most aligned life against the backdrop of everyday life. Through my solo episodes and interviews with inspiring women who are just as likely to meditate as they are to curse. The goal of this podcast is to empower you to unapologetically make space for you to live your best life. And remember, self-care can change the world by changing yours first. Are you ready? Hey guys, so I have got some pretty massive news to share with you. Before we get into this week's podcast episode with the oh-so-wise Kate of Your Courageous Life, I have been keeping a secret for quite some time now, but I'm finally able to share. Are you ready? I feel like I need a drum roll. The Journal Deck is getting a makeover. So back in January, if you remember, I told you guys that I was holding JD back by not fully giving it space to grow. Well, I went all in. When I got real with myself, I could not deny that the current first edition designs of the Journal Deck no longer resonated with me and didn't feel like me. As the creator, I was feeling connected to the overall mission and concept of the Journal Deck, but not the design. It felt disjointed and, in a way, one-dimensional. And maybe it's because of all the growth I've had since launching in 2017, but this design makeover feels really true. You guys know that I'm all about pivoting when need be, and this is the next evolution of the Journal Deck. It feels like we're becoming like we're a teenager now. I designed it totally on my own with a pale pink goddess deck and oranges and purples for the OG. I had key desired feelings in mind while designing, such as modern, mystical, calming, luxe, light, femme, and inspired. I hope that you feel all of these things when you see the new, more mature deck look coming very soon this Mother's Day, when we also launch another part of our brand new Give Back initiative. So be on the lookout on Instagram. You'll see some teasers coming at you. There's just so much coming between the new deck look, the new website look, because of course it needs to match, and then another part of our Give Back initiative that we're rolling out here. We're going to be announcing that as well, and it all ties into Mother's Day, and you know, there's a reason that we're launching the new site on Mother's Day with the new deck, and of course there's a reason, right? So, I feel like I need a breath. breathe out. And with all of that being said, let me go ahead and introduce today's guest, Kate. Welcome back to another episode of the Self-Care Spotlight. I have got an amazing raw conversation lined up for you today with author, speaker, and life coach Kate Swoboda, who the one and only Danielle Laporte said offers a kind of clear courage that inspires more courage in others. I loved that. Clear courage. That sounds good. So Kate, she's the creator of YourCourageousLife.com. She's the director of the Courageous Living Coach Certification and author of The Courage Habit, How to Accept Your Fears, Release the Past, and Live Your Courageous
life. She helps individuals, teams, and companies see where old fear-based habits have kept people stuck or started to limit what's possible for an organization, and then start creating more courageous lives by getting into the Courage Habit, a four-part process for behavioral and organizational change. Sounds super cool, right? She has appeared in MindBodyGreen, Entrepreneur, USA Today, and Forbes, just to name a few, and her website, Your Courageous Life, was named a top 50 blog for happiness by Greatest. We've got an awesome guest here, right? Kate, she proclaimed during this interview, guys, that she was feeling particularly feisty during this interview, and her realness truly shines on issues like fear of rejection and how the life coaching / self-help industry can be seen as not a real career or even naive. This was a very wise, deep conversation, I felt, and I know that you'll feel fired up like I did and feel ready to share your light and stand fiercely in your courage, despite the haters, despite your fears, which, by the way, Kate has no interest in crushing. In fact, she wants you to mindfully move through your fears. Let's dive in. And with that, welcome Kate to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are very, very welcome. As I told you before we jumped on the call, anybody who Danielle Laporte recommends, I'm totally on board with. I want to talk to that person. I love you listening to your podcast. I think you have such a, I don't know how to describe it, kind of chill way of going about talking. About like serious things. Have people told you that before?
Trying to think of how people have put it, because so what you're totally tapping into is I don't think of myself as chill as an identity, right? Like I think of myself as like, it's on the list, things I could work on being a little more chill, you know? So that's why I think I have a little bit of that, like, oh, really? Tell me more. Yes. I love hearing that about myself. How I think of my style is a mix of pragmatic and woo.
love it.
I'm good with whatever works for the person as long as it truly works. And I'd like to think that I have done enough work that for the most part, my inner critic, which used to be kind of more in service to like a little bit of bullying to get me to take action, or a lot of bullying to take me to get action, is now more in a space of just kind of like really good at calling bullshit, you know? And I think there's a definite service that the critic can provide in that area. You know, there's abuse, which is like, what's wrong with you? And then there's like calling bullshit, which is like, now Kate, you going to do what you said you're going to do? Okay. You know, that's a little bit different. So, I mean,
I think that's what I'm picking up on. I think it's when I say chill, maybe another word is real.
Yes. I've heard that definitely. Yeah. I tell it like it is.
I get this vibe of like when I'm listening to you on your podcast, Your Courageous Life podcast, I just get this chill vibe. I get this very real vibe. You're talking about serious, you know, things about people's lives and all that, but you feel really real and authentic. And to me, that also translates in some way to like chill. Like I could just have a conversation with you and not feel at all nervous or anything like that. Even though you seem very wise, you don't come off as intimidating. So I don't know. That's my take on it.
I dig it. I'll take it. I like it.
Okay, cool. So, all right, Kate, I'm really excited for this conversation. So I'm going to dive right in here to something that you said, okay? This is you, your book, The Courage Habit. So you write, if we want to make bold, courageous life changes,
we need to also understand how our habitual ways of being are either supporting or stopping us from change.
Yeah. So, I wrote that.
Here's the thing. Okay. This really resonates me. This really resonates with me because I had, Kate, a very big aha moment earlier this year that I was the one holding my company, the Journal Deck, back.
Mm.
And I had told you in email that I was switching the podcast. Originally, when I had spoken to you first, the podcast was on under Alyssa Cousins. And I said, hey, by the way, it's going to switch under my company, the Journal Deck. And, just kind of casually put that in just so you understood and weren't confused. But I had this aha. And I realized that I was in the habit. You're all about habits. I was in the habit of constantly starting new things.
Hmm.
Because I was afraid to take something seriously for fear that I wasn't good enough to lead a thriving business. So I self-sabotaged and I started and I quit and I started and I quit and I split my attention into a million projects, never giving one thing my all. And when that hit me, and when my husband also sat down and told me that, and my friend Allie, who I was just, actually chatting with you about because you were on her podcast, she also told me the same thing. They were telling me that in a very loving way, but it also then hit me really hard. And I realized what I was doing. And this was just very recent. And I decided that in that moment, I was going to kick Journal Deck into high gear, and I called it JD 2.0. And I was like, I'm done. That habit isn't working. I thought that it was just like a cute thing. Like, oh, I'm just really good at starting things. I love the starting phase of businesses and blah, blah. But that wasn't it. It was a bad habit that I had gotten into out of fear that I couldn't do it, that I couldn't actually just lead a thriving business. So I would distract myself or start and quit. So when you say that, how our habitual ways are either supporting or stopping us, whoa, it was stopping me.
Yeah. We don't normally think of behaviors as being habitual beyond, say, I got the habit of brushing my teeth. I got the habit of, picking up my mail as I walk from the curb to the door. Mm-hmm. But we don't really think of habits as like, oh, that response that you have in the middle of an argument, that behavioral response, that's a habit. Or the way you handle business ideas, that's a habit. Yeah.
Right. How could I have seen that sooner? Because I feel like, oh gosh, Kate, if I could have seen that like a while ago, how can we see these blind spots that I genuinely thought from a different perspective to me, it was, you're good at starting things. You love the startup phase. And that's that could be a genuine thing. Like people that are just really good at startups and getting things going. I didn't see it. Like it felt like I was blindsided and it hit me like a Mack truck. Like, oh my gosh, like, wait a minute. I am not looking at this in the right way here. I mean, how could I have seen that sooner? How can we see our own blocks sooner? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I kind of think that's the wrong focus. Not wrong as in bad, you're bad or, but like as in where is it the most productive use of your time? Like if you want to see more stuff sooner, it's thank God I did. For people who are struggling in general, I think that this is a huge part of what I mean when I talk about you've got to look at the fear. There is no fearless. I am not at all. It drives me crazy when somebody's like, Kate's all about fighting fear, or helping you to be fearless or silencing your fear. No, fear has a really valuable message to give. And I'm calling it fear, but we could substitute a person's uncomfortable experience of choice. You know, when you feel overwhelmed, when you feel out of your comfort zone, when you lack confidence, when you feel like life just isn't working and you're stuck. I call all of that fear because fear is involved, but you could call it something different. And so it's a matter of looking at life and going, when something does not feel good, why is that? And what am I willing to do about it? And as soon as we butt up against our own resistance, all the places where it's like, well, you know, nobody would listen to me if I spoke out about that issue. Well, you know, I don't really know enough. I'm too old. I'm too young. What if I got criticized? What would people think? I would feel stupid doing that. You know, as soon as all that starts, that's like the portal in. And unfortunately, with habitual behavior, one of the reasons why it's harder to recognize is because, you know, just you just gave such a perfect example, and it's a really beautiful gift you're giving to your listeners, giving such a vivid example to help them learn from you. But, you know, in the short term, every time you were choosing the habitual behavior of shiny object syndrome, aka you know, changing up the business idea instead of following through all the way and getting the gifts of a deep commitment, it was giving you a short-term relief. And that short-term relief only sent a signal to your brain, yeah, this works. Mm. And that's a huge thing for people to really recognize. And it was, I mean, I felt like it was this massive aha when I fully connected to it. It was like, I mean, on some level, we're all floating around and we're all aware that, like, yes, you know, brain makes habits, and, you know, the habits that we have, you know, can either serve us or not serve us. And, you know, there are all these books, and Tim Ferriss, I think, has written two of them that you could probably like clock a robber with in the middle of the night, because they're so thick, full of podcast interviewees who have said, here are the habits that create success, and here are the habits that create wealth, and here are the habits that create, you know, you living your dreams. We read about those things. We kind of tend like side, a little side thing where we think about those things, but we often don't go, hold on a second. Like, what's happening in my brain? Mm-hmm. What's my conception of the world? What's my conception of where I'm limited? And where have I been thinking that for a hell of a long time? And where have I been thinking that that is even me? And it's not even me. It's mom, or it's dad, or it's that teacher who told me I couldn't do it, or it's society telling me that because I belong to a certain group, or my skin color, or my sexuality, that I can't have something, or that I can't do something, or that I'm not capable of something. And I think that, and in using that last example, by the way, I am in no way saying that the challenges that any group faces or any person faces aren't real. It's not that they're all in your head. More so, what I'm trying to say is that we often can get stuck in an autopilot, habitual way of even thinking about the struggles that we encounter, and start limiting ourselves to, this is all there is. What am I going to do? Got to be realistic. And that is something that I think the more we wake up to, the more we understand that, you know, everybody's going to encounter challenges, but not everyone responds to life's challenges in the same way. And there are some responses that really can help you to live a better life, to not get stuck in depression and anxiety, to be healthier, to feel more connected to the people around you. The more we can wake up to that, the better.
So you said something in there that I completely 1000% agree with. And something I've spoken to my friends about, I think I've talked about it on this podcast, and that's the whole notion of when people tell you Kate's fighting fearless, you know, be fearless. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that it literally, it's like nails on a chalkboard. Like, I hate the word fearless. I don't dig it. I think it's so misleading, and it's like a fallacy. So I agree with you. My question is, because I've asked other people this, I want to know what you have to say, because you're all about this. So what do you say then to people who say, but if you're afraid, then you're not trusting in the universe enough, that you're putting too much faith in your human self, and that if you truly were putting faith in like a higher power and that trusted that you'd be okay. Because I've heard people say this in the self-help community, the self-development community, all the things, this new age community, you know, that you're only afraid because you're trusting like in yourself essentially. And I just take issue with that. I understand what they're saying on one side of the coin. I do get it. But I also think that I don't fully agree with them. So, I mean, have you heard that before? I've certainly heard that. I've actually heard it from, I'm not going to name names. I heard it from a really, really well-known author in this self-development spiritual world. And when the way that I interpreted it is how she said it was that. And it really bothered me because I just don't take that approach to fear. So what would you say to, I mean, how do you respond to that idea that being afraid means that you're trusting too much in yourself and you're not trusting in a higher power?
Well, I tend to go very nuanced with all of this. So if you go look at my website right now, yourcourageouslife.com, you're going to find pieces. You know, I take care not to take just a snapshot of what someone says and go, okay, that's the whole, because I'm thinking about like, God, how would I feel if that was me? Mm-hmm. So like I'm going with, you know, if you go to my website right now, you're absolutely going to see pieces on there that are like, look, you know, kind of like I'm trying to help people have a, you know, like wake up moment. Like, look, when your fear is telling you that you can't do something, you need to not believe that voice. Okay. You need to take the first action and not sit and stew in what fear is telling you. You will find also messages on my website that are about, hey, slow down, listen to what the fear is trying to tell you. It might have something valuable to share. And that's not because I'm trying to intentionally confuse anyone by contradicting myself. And that's not because one is more right than the other, or I've changed my mind. It's because there's nuance in this human experience. And sometimes we all need to hear, like, a kind of cut the shit. Like, you need to look at why you are spending so much time here instead of there. And then there are other times where it's like, sweetie, it's fine if you are spending time here instead of there. And I can hear one on one day and it's valuable. I can hear another on another day and it's valuable. And I think that's the same thing when it comes to human beings. Here's what I know based on what the research said. I did not find any research when I was researching my book, The Courage Habit, that indicated that ignoring your fear was a healthy, effective way to manage it. What I found was research showing that fear arose and that moderating fear is what was effective, moderating anxiety. So fear is basically physiological. We feel it, right? And then we respond to it. And when we have those feelings of fear in our body and the meaning we make of it, which is the response, is going to be how we navigate it. And like, if we just slow down and look at those two pieces, it's like, okay, you know, if somebody feels like the way that I need to handle my fear, the thing that actually helps me to move forward in my life is to put complete trust in the universe, then okay, if they want to feel their fear, notice that they go to a place of, oh my God, I'm really afraid, I'm not trusting the universe. And then for them, if what works is, you know what I need to do? I need to put my faith in the God of my understanding or in the universe at large, then great, you know? And if someone notices that they do that and it's really just a lot of spiritual bypass and they're trying to like take a shit sandwich and like wrap it up in a pretty little bow, and not really have to deal with the fact that they got a shit sandwich sitting right in front of them, it's not going to be very effective. So there's nuance to it, okay, which is that, of course, faith is needed. And of course, at some point, people have to stop kind of clenching their fists and trying to be the one to do to make things happen in the world. Right. That there needs to be room for magic. There needs to be room for the divinity of 16,000 invisible spiritual threads all coming together to weave your life and put you in that right place at the right time. And I think there's also something to be said for, you cannot sit on your ass and not put effort into it and actually, you know, do something, shift a mindset, get clear. It's a hodgepodge of both. And I think that if I were to, I think attaching to dogma is actually like the bigger issue behind all this. If I attach too much to the idea that I got a hashtag hustle, then that's not a great way to live. You know, I mean, I don't know, maybe it must work for Gary Vaynerchuk, or however you say his last name. I mean, because that's kind of like the whole thing that he produces and like his whole gig. But I look at him on those videos and I'm like, so clear, that would never work for me. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no part of me that wants to live that life as he presents it. So dogmatically, going in that direction, it's not going to work for everyone. And I can be really clear, it's not going to work for me. At the same time, the people who go, it is just total faith in the universe and fear is a sign that you don't trust the universe. I'm just going, no, fear is like a really human emotion. And mm-hmm. I see divinity in the human experience, frankly. Mm-hmm. I think that we're here to feel all of it. And I think, in fact, that as humans, we do feel all of it when we aren't, you know, trying to put a pretty filter on it for Instagram. Mm-hmm. So we do feel all of it. And I see divinity in that. And I don't see anything wrong with fear.
Yeah.
It's just a wound, actually. Mm. Like if you had a small child that was afraid, how would you treat that small child? If the child was afraid, would you tell it, well, God, why don't you have a little trust in the universe? You know, it's like, come on, you know, like, no, a small child that's afraid needs care,
right?
And compassion and honey, what's going on? Why don't you tell me a little bit? Maybe we can fix it together. Maybe I can help. Maybe there's no fix and all you need is my empathy and my love.
Yes. I love that. Yes, it's nuanced. It really is. And it's like a co-collaboration, how it's between you and, say, you know, like you said, there's that room for you and that hustle part. If you want to put that word in, I have issues with the word hustle, but you know,
yeah,
that, and then the magic, as you said, you know, the divinity. I agree. I really do. I see it as this two-way, co-collaborative, beautiful, beautiful thing happening. And I love how Susan Piver, yeah, I was checking out your website, you know, doing all my due diligence here. And I saw that she wrote that you show folks a spiritual view that fear is a gateway to fearlessness.
Hmm. Mm. I was pretty tickled the day that endorsement for the book came in.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she's fabulous. And that way that she put that was like, nailed it. Nailed it. Really. A spiritual view that fear is a gateway to fearlessness. Ah. Yeah, like I get that.
From what I understand of her, you know, because I said I don't do fearless. From what I understand of her saying fearlessness and what I understand of my, you know, like the way that I want people to understand my work, you know, in that sense is, you know, it's the Buddhist concept of fearlessness, which is all about you're totally afraid, but there's something so raw and honest about being with your fear that it dissipates the fear, if that makes any sense. So, you know, I've been in workshops before where somebody in that workshop is like going to the depths of their pain. And let me tell you something, I will trust someone who is willing to go to the depths of their pain and be that vulnerable more than I will trust a hell of a lot of other people, because and I'm talking about a conscious choice to trust, because that person is being really honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going, you know, it's like, I'm not afraid of anyone who's honest.
Right. So, okay. How do I want to put this? I was really thinking about this, and I was thinking, I've got Kate. I've got, you know, this woman who lives and breathes all things courageous living, fears, all the good stuff. What can I ask her that's really going to help people? And I thought about this idea that a lot of us, when it comes to fear, we end up using excuses that we might not realize are excuses. We might play the someday card. Because to me, when I think of courageous living, another word I really get is this idea of authentic living. And that courageous living, you know, is living this, you know, a life that feels authentic and in alignment with your soul, with you. And that's really scary to do. That's why courageous living. You know, well, here, first question. This sounds so simple, but I know it's not. Why do you think, if we know that, like, you know, living your truth and whatever kind of corny little thing you want to put on there, that's corny but so true, living your truth, living your life in alignment, living your best life. If we know that, like, going after your dreams and really, like, living a life, doing work that lights you up, all the things, if we know that that is just going to make us feel such joy, no one's denying that, then why don't we? Like, why don't so many people go after it? I mean, it being like their dreams, their best life. Why don't we? I don't know. Yeah, it's just why. I mean, do you have a thought of why? I've really thought about this. Like, if we know, that's going to make me really happy if I went and pursued that, but we don't. Why do you think, like, that is? What's the number one reason?
We're socially wired, and that's part of the human experience, to be socially wired for connection. And we are afraid that other people will reject us. And when we're not afraid that other people will reject us, we have spent so long not, you know, being in the wounding of having been rejected before, that we've internalized that experience of rejection and taken it on, and we reject ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think it's all about love. So we don't stick our necks out too far and get really visible with the things that are our biggest dreams if we think that the people around us are not going to accept us. So that's one piece of it. We're socially wired. We want to be accepted. We want to be loved.
Okay. Let me.
And at the same time, we have all been hurt before. And one of the curious things that our brains do when we're hurt, especially if we're hurt in a big enough way or in a chronic enough way, is we internalize the hurt and we actually create within ourselves a critic or a person who sort of steps in for the external person who initially did the hurt. You know, it's like if you grew up with your teacher saying, "Who do you think you are?" We end up internalizing that, and then we have our own voice that goes, "Who do you think you are?" And that voice steps in and says, you know, "I won't approve of you if you fail at this. I won't approve of you if you don't follow through," or, you know, comes up with these criticisms. So we're socially wired looking for love, and we're afraid that we won't get love from others, or we're afraid that we won't get love from ourselves if we don't do the things that we are hoping to do in the way that we conceive of them in our minds, or if actually, you know, the saying about, you know, we fear our success, you know, the Marianne Williamson quote, we fear how big we actually can be. That's absolutely true. I mean, and it's all over the place. You know, the idea that, you know, even being your best self is now regarded as corny. You know, there's this whole thing of, like, that people who are positive now get mocked and made mm-hmm. fun of. Life coaches get mocked and made fun of, which always is, like, something I'm shaking my head at. It's like, of all the things you could mock in the world for a profession, You know, I don't see anybody mocking the CEOs of a soft drink company who are pouring sugar down people's throats and telling them that that's health. Right. I don't see anyone mocking the gazillions of people who lobby to prevent, environmental regulations that would actually save the planet. But like life coaches who are really hoping that somebody who's suffering is going to feel better about their lives and develop better coping strategies and emerge with brilliance and power, we're the ones who get mocked.
What do you think that's about? Is that just our own societal rejection of being like the same thing that you were just talking about?
Completely. Yeah. It's for someone to be happy, the thing that shocked me, and I have a history, and thankfully it's very much in my past at this point, but I had a history of clinical depression, suicide, cutting, and eating disorder. And I thought that when I finally managed to be, in my conception then, a happy person, that it was going to be so great, that I was going to be surrounded by all of these happy people. Like, I was finally going to be happy. And the only reason I wasn't more connected to other people right in that moment was because I was such a miserable, unhappy person. Well, hell of a shock to me to discover that when I finally became happy, when I started talking about dreams and power and possibility, and I really believed it, and it wasn't a line that I was toting, I got told to be realistic. Or someone felt very uncomfortable because my happiness threw a mirror up for their own unhappiness, so they would wet blanket what I was up to, or they would say that it wasn't realistic, or they would, people, I mean, we've seen it all the time. People go into a space of like, oh my God, she got like a lot of internet attention and then she got really arrogant. And it's just like, well, I guess if you want to see it that way, you know, at first this was deeply hurtful to me, but now it's just like, well, I guess if you want to see it that way, because even the happiest people in the world aren't like running around in glitter and rainbow farts all the time, you know, like, you know, being happy is, you know, it's some parts clinical, sure, but you know, it's a lot of parts work.
Sure.
And good work, you know, it's a habit that you cultivate like so many other things. When I am presented with a problem, because everybody in life faces problems, who do I want to be? Who do I want to be? How, and what is what I choose about who I want to be going to say about where my life goes next? And that's a hard thing to look at. And it's going to get lampooned on Saturday Night Live. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me. But you know, that's a cheap shot. There are a lot of people right now who look perfectly happy on the outside, and they are deeply suffering on the inside. And as a society, it's really sad to me that we make jokes about those people and make self-help or personal growth seem like this, you know, at one end, super cheesy, like, oh my God, you know, kind of thing. And then at the other end, make it seem completely brainless and narcissistic and a waste of time and money, full of charlatans.
Ugh.
Well, let me tell you something, you know, people commit suicide every single day because there's nobody in their corner that they believe, at least, who is going to say, hey, your life matters. Your dreams matter. I believe your voice is important. Mm-hmm. So why do we do this as a society? Because we're deeply uncomfortable with vulnerability. It's like, you know, total hat tip to Dr. Brené Brown and her body of work.
Mm. Oh my gosh. You just said that so beautifully. I'm just like trying to soak in what you just said. That's good. Oh.
Well, to be honest, since I'm on an interview and this is all going to be recorded to go out into like the world, I'll just go ahead and say, like, if you really knew me today, I'm in a little bit of a feisty mood about it. I'm in a little bit of a, like, you know, I'm kind of sick of this shit, you know? And I think that's because a friend of mine on Facebook this week, her son committed suicide. And it's just like, there's just this part of me that is just sitting here like, I'm tired of the critique and the we got to dismantle what life coaches are about, and they're all bougie, and you know, we got to look at, you know, I just, I don't know, there's just this place in me that's just like, today, you can bleep me out if you need to, but today, just like, fuck all that. I'm not having that. Like, the world is suffering and my profession is not a joke. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to be up to and what a hell of a lot of other coaches I'm connected to are trying to be up to is not about like pithy sayings just to, you know, make it through the day. Mm. What we're actually about is we're really trying to elevate what's possible in the world for ourselves and for others and for our community and create a ripple effect. And of course, not every coach is on board with that, but the ones I associate with are, and I believe you are, and I believe people listening to this are. And I'm just kind of over it with anybody who's just dismissive and mocking, and it's just like, run along elsewhere. You know, there are people who die, who suffer and die, not knowing how loved they are, not knowing that they have the capacity to change.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I'm trying to like get my words together.
I'm dropping a little feisty bomb in here.
No, it's really beautiful. It's good, beautiful, feisty. I really appreciate you saying that. I've kind of stepped a little bit of away from coaching as I pursued the journal deck and different things. But, you know, coming from that world, having been a coach, having been coached, and have had people say like, what's a life coach? You're coaching about life. Like, I could be a life coach, you know, like, you know, it has gotten, you know, and I've also gotten thrown in my face, as I'm sure you have, it sounds like, you know, that I live a life in rose-colored glasses. And
it's like, why fucking not? Like, you know, I mean, rose-colored glasses still see the pain. They just also see the opportunity.
You know? Love you and Rose. Yes.
It's just like, I am, look, I'm over here and I am under no illusions whatsoever about the state of the world and the things that need to change. And I'm also really clear that I can't draw from an empty will. None of us can. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is we have to fortify ourselves in order to have something to give. And giving to the point of burnout, or to the point of like an anxiety collapse, which I know many of my friends who have started to try to pay attention more to the suffering in the world. It's like, you know, there's a lot to be said about the need for self-care as it applies to how we stand up for others to have the right to self-care and others to have the things that the privilege that self-care brings.
Absolutely. And that's a huge part of why I have this podcast. Absolutely. The self-care spotlight. So, okay. Everything you were just talking about, it's actually really interesting because I was just having a bit of a conversation with a woman who's been on the show also before, Stephanie Birch. And she had made a post and said about almost, she has a something called Write Club and it's in her hometown and it's prompts and things like that. And she said she found that the prompts that everybody wants to talk about and that people most connect with are always the really heavy ones, the pain points. And she said, like, why do we only connect through pain? Like, yes, that's very valid. But what about the joy? And what about all of, you know, the good things in life? And can we find connection in those places too? And not only focused on the negative and connect through the pain points. And she was really kind of, you know, putting the question up of why that is and why do we only want to seem to connect through pain points. And it just kind of reminds me of a little bit of what you're saying in that people are so quick to say, you know, that life coaches and people that are practicing self-care and that do all of these things that they would deem as woo-woo and all this stuff is the kind of like they write it off. Like, well, you're seeing life in a very naive, like, kind of sort of head in the clouds way. But you know, I think that it's an interesting point of, but why do we, you don't always have to only connect through pain. Yes, it's absolutely valid to look at pain and you can find beautiful connections in that, in the hurts of life, but what about the other side of it? Am I making sense what I'm saying?
Well, what's the question for you?
Well, it's not really, so I guess what it is her question was, can we find connection through joy as much as pain? And she thought it was very interesting that everyone seemed to really only want to look at the fear and the pain and the hurts of life, and that they didn't so much want to look at the other parts, that they didn't get as much by looking at the joy and the other side of life, if that makes sense. And she thought that was very interesting overall, that which prompts people liked the best. And I've even noticed in the journal deck, people respond to the prompts that are the ones that go really, really deep and are, have maybe, I'll say, a negative connotation, or are talking about our deepest fears or our deepest wounds or childhood things, versus a prompt that's more lighthearted per se. So I do think that in that way, I see it as a relation that we do seem to always want to connect through, I'll say, like the darker lens of life, not as much on the lighter side of life. So it's more or less, I think, not so much a question, but I see it as a relation, if I'm making sense.
Well, I think they do that. I think people do that when there's no other outlet. You know, writing is a safe space for that outlet. And so, of course, it's going to come out there. I also think let's not pathologize emotion. Let's not even, I mean, I guess for easy placeholders, we can say positive and negative, but, you know, rage can be holy. Tears can be holy. This isn't like the emotion itself is not bad. What is not effective for our lives is when it gets to control what happens next. And for myself, I know what you're talking about, because there's a way in which it can be parasitic to keep dipping back into the treasure trove of the bad things that happened. And there's, of course, a way it can be healing. Mm-hmm. And a consciousness about which is essential. It's like, you know, I even now, you know, will sometimes do that. I had, in 2018, I had a friendship that I let go of and would talk about it with my husband. And I was very clear that there was a point when, you know, I was talking about what had happened in that friendship with my husband, and I needed to be pissed because she had lied to me about things. I needed to be confused and sad because, even though there were problems in the relationship, I really loved and cared for her. And I needed to like feel, and then, you know, I'd say, you know, we're recording this in almost spring of 2019. And I'd say sometime after the first of the year this year, after a couple months of like spinning in that place, it was very like, okay, all I would be doing at this point is ruminating. And there's a difference. I'd be just like dipping back into it again. I know everything I need to know about this person, about my own boundaries. I don't think of her as a bad person. I think of her way of being in our relationship not being a match for my way of being. And that's the place I had arrived at. But then in this weird way, I'd go back to like complaining about it again with my husband. And that's really, really different. It's like once I've dropped into that place where the charge is not there and I can objectively say, like, I didn't like the behavior, but I accept that it happened. Why do I need to go back and do, oh my God, it was bullshit when she said that. Could you believe she did? It's like, why do I need to do that? Right. And that's when it's like, okay, this is no longer helpful or effective. But, you know, at the same time, it's not, I'm not bad for that. I don't think people are bad. I think we process how we process. And the attention that we place on why we're doing, or rather, let me back up, the intention that we place on why we're doing what we're doing is everything. And speaking of intentional and being intentional, you know, when I was clear that it was time for that relationship to go, I literally went into like carved out a day to go into all the feelings about it. Like nothing else on my schedule, got a big box of tissues and a pillow and, you know, to, you know, conscious crying. It was just like, I just needed to cry. Like the betrayal that I felt, the anger that I felt, the loss that I felt, the, oh my God, that fun time we had, I'm not going to have that with her again. You know, all of that. I just went all the way into it. So that's the intentionality. And that's where I think we can tell the difference between processing through emotion and wallowing in emotion. Mm. And wallowing just isn't effective. It doesn't feel good. Mm. It doesn't get us anywhere. But, you know, I would never go to another human and say, you know, you're supposed to be over this by now. Don't write about it again. Or, you know, like, this is not, you know, I've decided for you that this is no longer an effective way for you to think about that experience that you've had. It's, you know, it's so personal. And we often want metrics, like how do we know the difference? Here's my metric. And this is, I guess you could say, kind of a cut the bullshit moment. I think you know. That's what I think. People are like, well, but how do I know if I'm, you know, wallowing in the emotion or processing in the emotion? And I'm just like, what do you think? What's the truth? And then people go, well, I don't know. Well, if I don't know wasn't an answer, are you still processing the pain or are you wallowing in the pain?
Okay. So on that same token, if I said to you, going into all these things of courageous living and going after your dreams and all the things, if someone said to you, you know, okay, you said, how do you know the difference between it's not the right time right now versus you're just like playing, like it's genuinely not the right time, or are they just playing the someday card? Would you say the same thing? Like, well, you really do know. You know the difference. You know if it's actually, no, it's genuinely not the right time, or you're just playing the someday card. Would you say the same thing? Like, you actually do know the difference?
Yeah, probably. Because I think that people, you know, it's like I'll think of times when I've had ideas for projects and I've been very clear it wasn't the right time, but I wasn't playing the someday card when I had a baby. And it was like, if somebody had put it to me, like, is it really not the right time for you to launch that project? Or are you just playing the someday card? Which, like, probably I'd phrase it more like, you know, just what's your integrity say? You know, is it not the right time for this project? Or is it the right time? And you're hesitating. Try to take away the other piece of it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, it's not the right time for it. I'm managing all that I can manage. It would be really nice if I could add that. I have a lot of ambition. Sometimes it's hard for me to decide what I'm going to focus on next. And I'm also really clear. My priorities to my body recovering after giving birth and this little nugget human who's tiny and keeps me up all night. Like, that's my priority and that's what I can do right now. And I think, though, that the big piece in asking ourselves that question is whether we ask it with judgment or not. Mm. You know, it's like, is it really okay to say to ourselves, it's not the right time right now? Is it really okay to acknowledge for ourselves, oh, I'm totally letting my fear tell me to push this off? And the reason that I'm pointing that out is because it's another, you know, personal growth thing, this idea that, like, you know, you're always supposed to be going after the next thing and, like, dream bigger and play bigger and da da da. And I'm just like, this is a human experience. You know, it's nuanced. It's, yeah, there are times where, you know, a little pinch in the butt to get you going on that project's like, yeah, stop messing around. You have maybe 100 years on this planet if you're lucky. Get your butt in gear, go write the book, go travel the world, go have the baby, go get the divorce, go start the business, go whatever the thing is. Go now. Do not wait.
Okay.
So there are other times too, though, where, you know, people need some space held for you're totally in your fear and it's keeping you from going after that thing. Before we rush to go do something, what do you need, honey? What's going on here? What's really going on here?
I want to take a sec and I want to loop back because something that you had said, because it ties in here, and you had said that people are afraid of their own success. And people who are afraid of their own success, they often will play the someday card and make different excuses and things and live in their fear. Could you just elaborate on why you believe that we are afraid of our own success?
And it's the fear of not being connected. That's what I think it all comes back to. It's the love. So if somebody's really successful, people are going to resent you. People are not going to understand it. People are going to say, who do you think you are? And as you're more visible, people are going to critique the things that you do.
Right.
You know, the day that I announced to the world that I was going to be a life coach, like officially this was going to what I was going to be, you know, I went onto social media ages ago and said, this is what I'm going, you know, to do. I'm really excited. One of my in-laws sarcastically posted on Facebook, I guess today's a day for everybody to decide they're going to be a guru. Which, sure, watch what you make it mean. Could have been that person saw something that had nothing to do with me. But like, here we go. You know, like this is what happens when you stick your neck out and get visible about your dreams. And the other flip side, though, is it's the internal thing. So we fear, we've internalized some of the criticisms of others. And one of the things that keeps us small around success that comes from within is, you know, okay, am I going to be able to replicate that result again? Oh, well, you know, like God, you know, I mean, everybody says you want a 6-figure business, 7-figure business. I don't know, all the work that would come with that. The tax bill. Do you know how many people I've talked to who are like, I don't even know that I want to make a lot of money because the government would take like half of it. And it's just, I don't understand that logic. And if I can go woo, I'm like, universe, if you're listening, give me theirs. I'll pay my tax. I like bridges. I like public schools. I'm, you know, like I'm not thrilled with paying administration government official salaries at the moment, but you know, it's a cost of living. So, okay. You know, but like, give me theirs, I'll pay the taxes. But you know, that's the thing is people feel the pressure mm-hmm. because it's an unknown. And yeah. then they're afraid of how they will, that internalized critic will reject them for not knowing how to handle the unknown or the failures that could come with the unknown. Yeah. So like I said, I think that it all comes to, we don't go after our dreams from that fear of failure place because people will say something about it, or we're afraid of how we'll talk to ourselves if we fail. We don't go after success because of what people will say about it, how we will talk to ourselves as we manage the pressure of that success, as we navigate the unknowns of that success.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about connection.
I really like how you put that really succinctly, that we fear rejection from others. So we essentially reject ourselves. I've never heard it quite put that way. And that makes a lot of sense. I get that.
We've internalized it, you know, it's become part of how we do life. We're taught it and then we internalize it. And then we forget that we were ever taught it.
Mm. Okay. I have one more question. I need to ask this. And then I have a journal deck question I want to ask you. What are you afraid of right now? So all this fear, what are you maybe afraid of right now? What's going on in your life?
I tend not to be afraid of as many of the day-to-day things. You know, I run a life coach training program. I'm not afraid of teaching for that program or the progress of the trainees, stuff like that. The stuff I get afraid about is thinking about the world my daughter is growing up into when the man who was elected president admits to grabbing women and women voted for him and men are still happy that he's in power. That's the type of stuff I get afraid of. I live in Sonoma County, where we've had, the fires 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago. And then currently parts of Sonoma County are flooding. So I fear things like global warming. I fear things like the climate change causing political unrest and widespread famine. You know, I fear viruses, super viruses, you know, and I wouldn't say that's an active fear. You know, it's not like I'm sitting around thinking about it all the time, but if there are things that I'm afraid of, it's stuff like that. Now, fear of not being enough, which I think is like the classic fear, absolutely comes up, but these days tends to be more isolated. So it's like, it'll be, you know, if I'm doing a speaking gig, it's right before I go on stage, a little bit of like, oh God, what if... what if this sucks? You know,
what do you do then in that moment when you hear that voice? Cause everyone on this show is listening right now. That's like, oh hell yeah. I've heard that voice. I'm not good enough. What do you do in that moment? What do you suggest folks can do when they hear that inner critic go, you're not good enough. You're going to fail. You're going to suck at this.
Well, in the Courage Habit, I walk people through a tool that I use. It's called Redo Please. And it's where the critic can say things like, well, you know, hopefully this doesn't suck. And you actually dialogue with it and you go, okay, take a breath, redo please. I need you to say that in a way that's respectful. And these days I don't have to necessarily do that part. I've been doing this for years, like 10 years. So at this point, when the voice of fear comes up and says, you know, well, what if this sucks? And it's a little bit like, yeah, if it sucks, I'll still love you. You're going to go out there and you're going to do your best. It's all you can do anyway.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're even up on a stage, period, or in front of a group of people, period, already puts you in a very small percentage of people willing to do that in the world. And if I make even one person see something differently, then I've done my job. You know, so it's like lowering the bar, or remembering that there is no bar, that the bar is a complete mental conception. There's no actual bar. There's nobody sitting around, except for maybe assholes, waiting for me to fail. And I don't need the opinion of assholes. It hurts when people are assholes. I'm not saying a give no fucks kind of thing. I think that's posturing when people are like, give no fucks. It's like, yeah, you care. You give a fuck. It hurts. You just don't let it control you. So there's this way in which it's like, I don't need the bar to be really high. I don't need to have, I think, let me take it out of talking about me and talking about more universally to everyone listening to this. There's no proving ground. Like, you don't have to knock it out of the park to be a worthy human. You know, like, that's a conception that you can drop right now. For sure, I believe in, you know, like I said, everything's nuanced, but I believe in standards. I have standards around what I want my work to look like or what I want to hold myself to, but that standard is always guided by integrity. So integrity does not mean I have to push myself to be the best, to literally be perfect. Integrity means that my words and actions match. They're in alignment with my values, my beliefs, my commitments, my vision for my life. That's a definition I got from my own coach, Matthew Marzell. And integrity means that I do my best. And in every moment, I'm doing the best I can. And whenever I step into that space, like if I'm actually really interested, if anyone listening to this, if you are actually really interested in, you know, knocking it out of the park before you go on stage, that's actually how you need to talk to yourself. Mm-hmm. If you really want to, you know, perform in a way that hits the metrics that are external, that the people around you would go, wow, look at you, then the way you need to talk to yourself before you go in there is not, oh my God, I hope this doesn't suck. Shut up. Shut up, fear. Shut up. Don't say that. Don't say that. No, it's like, you know what? If it does, I will, you know, it'll be the opening chapter of my book. It'll be a great story. That time I went up on stage and I failed, and then I get to tell the story to the podcast, you know, about what I learned from it. And, you know, people can go, oh my God, it's just so like Pollyanna. Well, you know, you're entitled to your misery, you know? I'm happy to take life's you know, difficulties and go, what can I learn from them? How can I use that? And from what I can tell in my, I guess, air quotes, clinical experience of working with clients, that helps them to live better lives. That's what they've shared with me. And then, like I said, the research indicates that as well. I did not find any research anywhere that said participants found that they were better able to meet their goals when they told themselves, don't mess this up, you know. It doesn't work that way. It does not work that way.
Right, right. Okay. You ready for your journal deck question?
I'm so ready for my journal deck question. I think that's like, oh, so excited.
Okay, here we go. It's actually, this one's like a two-part.
Okay.
So the way this works is, like I said, these are all journal prompts. So I just pulled a card for you here. And it says, write in your journal today about what makes you feel free, who makes you feel free.
What makes you feel free and who makes you feel free?
Yeah.
So what makes me feel free? Letting who I am on the inside be how I actually live on the outside. And who makes me feel free? First thought that comes to mind is my husband. Because, you know, he's seen the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful, the calm, the, you know, poised, the messy, the all the in between, you know. And I think he genuinely loves what's inside. And I really believe that. He is just an incredible man. And he, I think, helps me in ways that he would never know. He's a completely like understated, almost shy guy. I don't think he's really shy anymore, but when we first started dating, he was shy. So he's not at all this like boisterous, you know, person that you might expect, but he is, you know, very much the, I had someone say to me recently, you know, Kate, because I'm very vision. I'm very like, what if we did this? Oh, it'd be cool to do this. Ooh, this would be a good idea. And somebody said to me, you know, Kate, you are the wind in the sails of that relationship. And I said, well, he's the boat.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. I really, really get that with my husband. I totally feel that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's so beautiful. I think that's all that we could hope for is to have someone that we are with that makes us feel that sense of freedom and loves us, like you said, genuinely for who we are. And the freedom that comes from that feeling is amazing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's, there's room. There's a lot of room when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Oh, that was a nice question. Okay. Last two fun questions here for you, Kate, to end off like a really beautiful, meaningful conversation. Milk chocolate or dark chocolate or not a chocolate person?
Whatever's dairy-free. So milk, if it's made with no soy or coconut, plant-based.
Yeah, I had someone in the last episode I asked. I always ask about the chocolate. I don't know. It just became one of these questions I ask all my guests. It's just fun now.
And she said, your personal Rorschach test.
Yeah. It's like, are you team milk? Are you team dark? I feel like it says something. I don't know.
I like the taste of milk, but I do the plant-based. So yeah, that's my preference.
And because I love astrology, what is your sun sign?
Ooh, Sagittarius, but I got five things in Virgo, which somebody once told me, you are the get shit done powerhouses of the zodiac. And I was like, ooh, I am taking that description. I liked that a lot.
Yes. Oh my gosh. When we were in Sagittarius just this past, you know, 2018, oh my goodness. I felt like I had my seatbelt on. Like, whoo.
What's your sign?
I am a Leo sun. But I have an Earth moon. I'm a Taurus moon, and my rising sign is Libra air.
Okay. So. Well, you've gone beyond my knowledge of astrological interpretation. The only thing I know is that, like, when I was pregnant, people were asking when my daughter was going to, you know, when the due date was. And I'd say, you know, it's in June, and people go, oh, a Gemini, like they knew something. And I was just kind of like, I don't know what you know. But
it's so amazing when you like look at your birth chart and have someone who really understands astrology, like break it down like I did. I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I understood myself on such a deeper level. That's why I think it's fun to ask my guests what their sun sign is, you know, your core personality sign. I find it so fun, so enlightening. And
I never understood that, you know, Sagittarians are associated with athleticism. And I never understood that. I was just always like, okay, I have to go to the gym because it's healthy, but I hate going to the gym. And then last year I discovered CrossFit and I'm obsessed. I'm like, oh my God, it feels so good to lift barbells. It's so great. So
good for you. CrossFit is no joke.
Yeah, it is. It's my jam.
Yeah, that's intense. I can't really hang much with that, I'll be honest with you. My husband used to compete doing it, and the warm up for me was like my workout, you know.
Yeah, this week they had us do burpees, and I mean, I did in one workout like almost 100, just shy of 100 burpees, and it was just like, yeah. Those will wear you out. Yeah.
Oh, on that note, courageous living. Okay, Kate, can you please tell everybody, where can they get your book, The Courage Habit? Like, where can they listen to your podcast? Like, where can they connect with you? Because honest to goodness, this was such a juicy, real, honest to goodness conversation that you just have so much wisdom. I know they're going to want to connect with you. So can you please tell everybody all the things?
I will tell you all the things. Okay. So if you want like kind of a one-stop shop, you'll find all of this probably if you head over to Instagram, and I'm Kate Courageous on Instagram. But my main website is yourcourageouslife.com. My life coach training is the Courageous Living Coach Certification at teamclcc.com. My book is The Courage Habit, and it's, you know, it's everywhere. It's at Barnes & Noble. People are sending me selfies of it in airports, which is like the best. If you have a selfie of my book in an airport, you will make my day and create some great karma for yourself, sending that to me, tagging me on Instagram. And I have two podcasts. One is the Your Courageous Life podcast. You can find it on iTunes everywhere. And the other is the Craft of Coaching podcast. And you can also find that on iTunes and everywhere else. So that's me.
Beautiful. All the ways to connect with Kate. So many ways. She has so much good wisdom to share. Just go find her. Get the book. If you're in an airport, definitely take a photo.
Please take the photo.
Oh, I know what you mean. When people take a photo of the journal deck, like at a wholesale location, like a shop, I'm like, oh, my day is made. It's in the wild. Like,
yeah, like bookstores or like, you know, sometimes people, because there are all these worksheets that come with the Courage Habit free, and people like do a shot of their desk with the book and their coffee and, you know, worksheets at a coffee shop or something. And I'm just like, oh, I love you. You just made me so happy. Thank you. I mean, that's just such a gift to anyone who's created something, speaking of which, and creating karma. I just have to say this before we hop off of here. Like, to, you know, we're talking about really like the fear of creating things, going after what you want, et cetera. Like for people like Alyssa, for people like me, like to have created something and then have other people acknowledge that it exists is like, oh, thank you. It's a full circle moment. It's an incredible gift. And I believe it creates great karma for the person doing the acknowledging.
Yes. Yes. Preach. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because boy, does it take courage to make something and put it out there. So when somebody can like really like, you know, send you something like a photo, even as simple as a photo, you're right. It feels so good, so damn good in your soul.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know how hard and how much courage it took to get to that point. So you are absolutely right. Kate, you have been an absolute pleasure to talk to. Thank you so very much for agreeing to talk to me and reschedule with me. You know, with all the things I have going on, you know, with my life, you were able to reschedule, and I'm just so appreciative of that. And this was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, guys. So Kate talked about some very raw issues in this episode. And because we know the scientifically studied benefits of journaling for trauma and PTSD, I am so, so proud and excited to announce this officially on the podcast. It's already been rolled out on social media, but it's my first time announcing it here on the podcast since we had our last episode back in April. You can now give $10 on our site, and we will donate a Goddess Edition journal deck in your name. You can also choose to remain anonymous, to the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh, where I am from and where our decks are also printed, for domestic violence survivors and their children. This is a new initiative. We already, as of me recording this, have, I think we're at 28 decks. I'm starting to lose count here. So I'm going to be hand delivering all of these decks to the center. I'm just so excited. I'm so excited that you guys are on board with this and that you're already donating. I am almost at 30. I guarantee by the time this episode goes live that we're going to be at 30, past 30. Let's get to 100, and then let's keep going, and then let's expand and maybe start to take them to other shelters beyond Pittsburgh, right? But I'm getting ahead of myself. Right now, we are donating to the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh for domestic violence survivors. Again, this new initiative, so it's called the Goddess Give Back Deck Program. And if you want to learn more about the details, or if you just want to go ahead and donate the $10, you will go ahead and find all of that information in the show notes, or you can simply go to thejournaldeck.com/episode80. Also, be on the lookout for that makeover that I was telling you guys about that's coming on Mother's Day. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to another episode of the Self-Care Spotlight and to this conversation, this really beautiful conversation that I had with Kate. You guys make my day. Every single time that you listen, every single time that you are sharing a direct message with me, you're posting about the podcast, you're commenting on something, you're sharing with others. Every time that you tune in to what I have to say and to what my guests have to say, you really do make my day. And it makes this show, this whole production, so, so worthwhile. So thank you. Deep gratitude. Have a wonderful rest of your day.